When Betty asked me, when I asked me first of all if I would be here for the sessions this year, and I said yes, I thought I'd better be here, see how she was doing. She said, then would I speak about remembering Mr. Sri Ram? And I said, but Radha's going to be there. After all, it's her father. And she said, no, you do some reminiscing. Well, I guess I'm at that horrible age in life when one begins to do more reminiscing than anything else. And one's conversation is frequently peppered with, well, I remember when, and this is the way we used to do it, and all of those things, that statements that come with age. But it is a privilege to talk about our past president, Brother N. Sri Ram. We knew him as Brother Sri Ram, really, because I did have that rich privilege, and I've often said that for me, at least, the Theosophical Society had two saints, both of whom I knew. One was Clara Codd, who had a profound influence on my young theosophist days and who kept after me to work for the society. And the other was Brother Sri Ram. Somehow they were, and by saints I don't mean that they were either one of them, divorced from the human scene, but they were supremely human in a way that I think is necessary to understand fully what it means to go ultimately beyond the human, truly human. So in thinking back about Brother Sri Ram, whom I met first on his very first visit to the United States in 1948, I was reminded of the fact that in the Bhagavad Gita, and Betty said I was also going to talk about the Bhagavad Gita, which comes on Monday afternoon, I was reminded of the fact that Arjuna, the protagonist in the one part of the dialogue, the human asking of questions of Sri Krishna, Arjuna asks on at least two occasions and implies on other occasions the question, what is the person who has a stable mind? What is this person that you speak of? What is he like? How does he walk? How does he talk? How does he carry on usual activities? And in the 13th chapter of the Gita, there are a list of qualities which Sri Krishna declares to be, then, the mark of that individual. The translation is the sage of stable mind, Annie Besant's translation. And whenever I read the verses that enumerate those qualities, I think inevitably of Brother Sri Ram. Humility, unpretentiousness, harmlessness, forgiveness, rectitude, purity, steadfastness, dispassion toward the object of the senses, absence of egoism, constant balance of mind. Now, I've abbreviated the list, but somehow those qualities, which are, I think, human qualities, truly human. I think most of us are just, at least for myself, we're in the process of trying to learn to be human. But those are really those qualities that mark the individual who really walks through life, not above the earth, but on the earth, and with a beauty and a grace. As I say, I met Brother Sri Ram on his first visit to the United States in 1948, a few years, therefore, before he assumed the presidency of the society, which he did in 1953. We had all been greatly anticipating the visit. I was here on the headquarters staff. I was one of the what we knew called in those days field workers. That didn't mean I was out in the back 40 landscaping, because I'm not a gardener, really. But field worker meant that I was out lecturing, giving classes under what was then known as the Spotlight Program under the presidency of James Perkins. And we had heard about Brother Sri Ram. In fact, the first sort of time that I heard about him was when Mr. Jinaraja Dasa, who was his predecessor as president of the society, preceded Mr. Sri Ram, was here in 1942. And I was a young theosophist, of course. And Mr. Jinaraja Dasa, Brother Raja, as we called him, said, "There is someone that I'm hoping will come to visit the American section." And he mentioned Brother Sri Ram, with the name just passed over, and that was it. But in 1947, Jim Perkins and his wife Catherine, whom many of you will remember, went to Adyar for the first time to the International Convention. And so this was their first visit. And when they returned in January, they said, they told us on the staff, "We have great news. Brother Sri Ram is going to tour the United States. And this will be his first visit." So it was announced that he would be coming in for the summer sessions. Actually, that was a most unusual year, 1948. Also coming, as the announcement said, would be Brother Sri Ram's sister, Srimati Rukmini Devi. Now, of course, Rukmini had been here on previous occasions also, and I think her last visit had been at the time that Dr. Arundale was still living and was the president, of course. They were both coming. We had already met Rukmini, but this was our first meeting with Sri Ram. And also here, at the same time, who had been touring the section for some 2 years, were John and Betsan Coates. And John Kern is nodding because he remembers some of this also. And Clara Codd had left the section just before the summer sessions. She had been here. She came in 1946 from South Africa, immediately after the Second World War. Now, in those days, believe it or not, the summer sessions lasted for 3 weeks. The first, can you imagine, Betty? And I can tell you what it was like for the staff. That I was young and enthusiastic in those days, and I didn't know any better. Anyway, the first week was a worker training week, and that was under the direction of the National Vice President, who was at that time Mr. Norman Pearson, whose name may be familiar to some of you, and his book, Space, Time, and Self, I think it is. Anyway, that was 1 week. Then we packed up, believe it or not. We packed up most of the staff. There was a kind of skeleton crew that stayed here. and we moved into Chicago. And so we then had our convention at one of the hotels. And in 1948, it was at the Congress Hotel. And then we unpacked and got everything ready and had the convention. And sometimes there were as many as 300, 400 members attending the convention in those days. And then we packed up a day in between. There was only a day in between each of these, day after worker training for packing up, moving into Chicago, packing up in Chicago and moving back here for a week of summer school. And the summer school that year, 1948, was under the direction, the director of it, or what was he called? I think it was just the director, chairman of the summer school, was John Coates. So it was quite a remarkable year. Well, Brother Sri Ram arrived in this country in early April 1948. And by the time he reached Olcott, which was in late June, as I recall, he'd already toured much of the section. So the reports of his visits were coming in, and from the various branches or lodges. This was really before the days of study centers, even, believe it or not. And in each one of these reports was, of course, what a beautiful person, what a marvelous person. His talks, absolutely superb. All of that constantly being told us as to how really wonderful he was. And so we were very much looking forward to his arrival at Olcott. And we were busily preparing, quite excited. Now, when I say, as I say, preparing for the sessions, this is what it meant, that not only were there the 3 weeks of sessions to be prepared for, but rooms at Olcott, rooms here, had to be prepared for those who were coming for these sessions. And the staff all doubled up. And we couldn't remain in our own rooms. And up here, this, of course, was a dormitory, a women's dormitory. Does anyone here remember the days of... Good, yes, Winnie, of course. I thought if Winnie Wiley's here, she'll remember. This was a women's dormitory up here. And, of course, the sessions were held in a large tent. And the tent was usually in the Besant Grove. And, of course, one reason women, all of us, wore long skirts was because of the mosquitoes. But anyway, there it was. We were very kind to our younger brothers even then and considered the mosquitoes as part of the creation. But, as someone said, even God makes a mistake. And, of course, later the tent was on the old tennis court, and then it was moved out here on the back road. So some of you may remember that. Miles, you should remember that.
I do.
I'm sure.
Joy, we slept on cots about 8 or 10 to each one of those rooms down in the main hallway.
That's right. That's right, yes. I was going to speak about where we put the boys and the men. That's right. But anyway, so this was what it meant to really be getting ready for the sessions. And the interesting part of this was that that Jim had asked Eunice, many of you remember Eunice Layton? Well, she was Eunice Shipp at this point. She was here on the headquarters staff. She was head of the Department of Information in 1948. And Eunice and I were responsible for being sure that the arrangements at the Congress Hotel were all in order. Now, this was really to put Eunice and me in charge of something like that. You know, Jim knew that it would get done. What one of us couldn't do, the other one would, as it were. And so we were constantly going in to Chicago to make sure that everything was in arrangement. This was the date of the arrival of the delegates to the Theosophical Society Convention, and then visiting the various restaurants and making absolutely sure that there were vegetarian items on the menus. You can imagine in 1948, vegetarianism was still something to be sort of raised eyebrows and so on. Well, here we had just met Brother Sri Ram, both of us. He had arrived here, and we saw what a wonderful person he was. We'd also heard about this from various members who had been at Adyar and members that we knew in other parts of the world that he'd already visited, and the reports coming in from the lodges where he'd spoken after his arrival in New York. And the main thing that we kept hearing was how calm and serene he was under all circumstances. Really unflappable. So Eunice and I, going in and out of Chicago to meet with various personnel at the Congress Hotel, had a kind of pact. Remember Sri Ram. Whenever one of us was about to blow up, become frustrated, angry at the executives at the Congress Hotel, things weren't going the way, just remember Sri Ram. And so we were all trying to practice being calm, especially Eunice and I.
She needed it.
So we were determined to be as gentle and calm as we heard he was. And so those of you who remember Eunice, well, and those of you who know me, will understand that we were attempting almost the superhuman for both of us. Well, I can't help but interject that as I took out of the American Theosophist the program for 1948 and the topic of Brother Sri Ram's talks, the Theosophy of Life, A World in Transition, his public lecture, The Problem of Freedom, his talk, Our Work as Theosophists Now and in the Coming Year. And I looked through all the names. This is what really shocked me, I must say, and I thought, my goodness. Of all the speakers that year, Sri Ram, Rukmini, John Coates, Betsan Coates, Ann Kerr, Seymour Ballard, Donna Sherry, Caroline Tess, who many knew as Caroline Ross later. I am the only one left living of those who spoke at any of those sessions. So I think it's time my name get erased from being the speakers. Another thing I must say about his arrival, we were also told, or Jim, I think Catherine had said something about that he liked morning coffee. And so various ones here on the staff were assigned to take his morning coffee to him. Knocked gently at the door, and when he said, come in, bring in the morning coffee. Well, we began to realize that there are an infinite number of ways, and I mean infinite really, in which you can prepare morning coffee. And each one who was assigned to take him morning coffee came back with a different report as to how he liked his morning coffee. There were convictions that he must have it with milk in it. He must have it with hot milk in it. He didn't want sugar in it. Oh, yes, a bit of sugar in it. Oh, no, black. Well, I must say, and I should have asked Radha, to this day, I have no idea how he really liked his morning coffee. Because however it was presented to him seemed to be all right. Well, of course, came the sessions, as I say. What can one say? When he, this gentle person, this person with dignity, who walked with grace, never hurrying, but not slowly, deliberately. And when he began to speak, always the precise word. His diction was so superb that we listened, we were taken to another realm, quite literally. As some of the reports said, he brought the reality of Adyar very close as he spoke of the work and activities there, of the spirit of international conventions, of the sense of the truly center of the society raying out from that splendid center at Adyar to all centers to the world. Mr. Sri Ram seemed always to provide those conditions for the perception of the luminosity of truth in which all things achieve their proper focus. His talks enlarged our vistas and made us aware of the practical applications of theosophy in terms of individual living. Who will forget the lucidity and beauty of Mr. Sri Ram's talks? Well, these are just a few of the comments in our report of the sessions. Seymour Ballard's comment on the summer sessions. Mr. Sri Ram said that when we meet in the elder brother's name, there is an increase of wisdom in the flow of ideas. We give, he said, more to each other than we realize now. Well, it was an experience. I have always loved the English language. I've had a passionate affair with the English language. And I've never known anyone, and I mean this literally, I have never known anyone who had such a command of the English language that the precisely right word was always the word chosen. And for me at least, it was as though new doors opened on the whole theosophical vista. I've always suggested, at least, that previously, to a large extent, there had been a kind of technical theosophy. Brother Raja, you know, with marvelous as he was, and I loved Brother Raja, and came to love him very much as a person and his command of theosophy and his links with the past and so on, all of that. But there was a technicality of how karma works. In his talk about, whenever I think of Brother Raja, I think of his outline of Devachan. He had it all worked out, where different rooms were going to be in Devachan. This was his Devachan. Radha's laughing. Wasn't that right, Radha? That it was, you know, in this room he was listening to Wagner, and in this room was his cat, G, and so on and so on. It was a kind of technicality. With Sri Ram, it was a matter of consciousness, a complete change. He didn't quote other writers. He didn't quote anyone. He was authentically himself in all of his talks. Authentically himself. And he spoke out of that depth of an understanding and a depth of wisdom that was incomparable in so many ways. Well, his next visit to the section, as I recall, was in 1951. At that time, I was not a member of the headquarters staff. I had decided that I ought to pursue my own career as a teacher. I was still a very active member of the society, but I thought living on the what then was the staff salary, which I hesitate to say what it was in those days because it would shock some of you of what we were expected to live on. And of course, we had our room and board, and that was wonderful. But beyond that, the actual cash. Well, I'll tell you, when I joined the staff in 1942, we received in cash, we had room and board, as I say, in cash, $38 a month for anything we needed. And that was it. And we lived quite happily on it, and we walked into Wheaton, and there were two cars here. There was the society's car, of course, and at that time, Sidney Cook was the president, and Mr. Cook had a car, of course. Sidney Cook had a car. But the rest of us walked. And if we wanted to go into Chicago, we walked into Wheaton and took the train into Chicago and so on. And that was a great affair. You didn't do very much on $38 a month, you know. Took care of toothpaste and a few other things, perhaps. In any event, I thought by this time I should take up my career and earn a little money and be able then to work for the society without being any drag on the society in my old age. And I hope I'm not. So I was living in Seattle. I was president of the Northwest Federation. And Brother Sriram came to Seattle in the course of his tour of the section. And we were able to host him. I was living in a house with two other longtime members of the society, and the three of us hosted him. And what a delightful and thoughtful guest he was. And that's when we learned. And some of the pictures were pictures I sent here to the archives from that visit in Seattle. And he was always the perfect guest. And yet his presence was there. You always knew. And this was true when he came for the sessions, not only the first time in 48, but later on, whenever he came. He would come, he would enter the tent, sit towards the back, usually, and there was as though there was an electric current went through the whole audience. You didn't have to turn around to know he was there. And it wasn't anything that was shocking like an electric current, but an electric current that vivified, that brought a new feeling somehow. I can't quite describe it. I don't have the vocabulary that he had. Well, there were later visits to the section. I'm not certain, and I didn't look up all the years. I do know he came in 1962 or 1963 during the presidency of Dr. Henry Smith, and I was vice president, national vice president at that time, and I remember one occasion very particularly. We had received a very large, quite a major bequest, part of which was designated for Adyar. And Henry and I had discussed together how to handle the Adyar portion of the bequest and had decided that probably it should be placed in the ABC America Fund. Now, you saw this morning in Floyd's presentation the ABC Fund. Originally, that meant Adyar Besant Commemorative Fund. It was for the Annie Besant Centenary. So it was the Adyar Besant Commemorative Fund. That's what ABC stood for. I guess it still stands for it. I'm not sure. Does it, Radha? Is it still the Adyar Besant Commemorative?
Yes.
Yes. So it's the portion held in this country. So we had placed it in that, assuming that Mr. Sriram, who seemed far more concerned with matters of deep spiritual import, that this would be acceptable. So we had, now remember, this is before emails and faxes and all of that sort of thing, so we waited until he arrived at Olcott, and we had a meeting with him and told him of the portion that had been designated for Adyar and what we had done with it. And he immediately said, quite firmly, but very gently, if the money was designated to come to Adyar, it must come to Adyar. And that was it. Well, I had occasion to see him also, therefore, as president. Of course, by this time, he was president. And one major occasion stands out so very clearly, and that was the great World Congress of the Society in 1966, held in Salzburg, Austria, when I first met Radha personally, although I had known of her. And so it was a great occasion, organized by the European Federation under the chairmanship of John Coates. It was the first World Congress that had been held since the war years, in fact, since 1936, 30 years. Some 1,200 members attended, and representing, I can't remember how many sections, but it was really a huge congress. And all the great names of the society were present. Rukmini, Clara Codd, Jeffrey Hodson, so many others who are no longer with us. Radha was there, as I say, as General Secretary of the Indian Section, and we had a very large delegation from the American Section, including Helen Zahara, the Laytons, Virginia Hansen, many more, of course. And I was there as the head of the American section at that time. And this was my first major international meeting, 1966, having just taken, a year before, having assumed the presidency and been elected to it. Early 1966. And there was a consultative meeting of the General Council of the Society, which is, of course, the international governing body. And this was held in accordance with the international rules. There were two other special meetings at the Congress during the period of the Congress, convened at the request of the American, Australian, and English sections. The first international publishing conference. Just as an aside, I might say, this is when we agreed to change our name from the Theosophical Press to the Theosophical Publishing House. Just a matter of history for you. We had just started the Quest Book programs. The Kern Foundation had just, with the year before, 1965, become available to us, and our first Quest books were being issued, the very first of the Quest books. We had no idea what we had gotten into, I can tell you that, but that's another story. And there was a conference on theosophical literature which concerned certain matters we wanted to discuss. So having seen Brother Sri Ram and heard him as a speaker, having met him, always choosing the right word, carrying us to truly splendid heights of inspiration and beauty, infusing theosophy with such a living quality that touched both heart and head, aware not only of that depth of wisdom from which he answered any question, I now saw him as president, leader, administrator, presiding over the business meetings with a firm but gentle hand, aware of the consequences of the situations, aware of the needs of the various sections. And I suppose, being newly elected and young still, one of the younger ones as president of the American section, one of the youngest presidents and the first woman to be elected president of the American section, I was filled with this enthusiasm and American spirit of what we thought should be done. But Sri Ram, in his gentle way, was aware of the smallest sections as well as the large sections. India, of course, is the largest section of the society. And always looked at how this would affect the small sections as well as the large sections. Whatever action was taken. It was a wonderful lesson for me, I must say. It's something that has meant a great deal to me, this holding in mind the welfare of the entire society, not just what this section wants or that section wants, but looking at the total picture, seeing the society as a whole. And we have that opportunity, as was said last evening, when the greetings from around the world were read, to realize that even in small areas, even in countries that are postage stamp size countries, if I can put it that way, there are members, and their needs too need to be considered. And so, one funny little incident somehow I remembered, which I have to mention. The minutes of the General Council meetings, which were held in those years, the International Convention used to be held alternatively between Varanasi in the north and Adyar in the south. And the minutes were sent to the heads of all sections and members of the council by sea mail, so that here in America, we would receive the minutes of the December meetings in August of the following year, which was really too late for us to decide on any actions we wanted to have taken and to comment on any questions or proposals that were brought up and on which a vote would be taken at the next council meeting. So Helen Zahara, who was one of the additional members of the council at that time, and she had been, of course, General Secretary in Australia, and I, as General Secretary of this section, were requesting that the minutes be sent to us airmail. Well, Sri Ram very patiently listened to our plea and said it would be taken under advisement. And Catherine Beachy, who was then the recording secretary, commented that this would be too costly for the society. To which I responded, well, the American section will pay the cost then. Now, of course, it's routine for the minutes to be sent airmail, isn't it, Radha? No question, the minutes are sent airmail. And perhaps one day they will be electronically communicated with all of this new technology. Goodness only knows. Well, the following year, 1967, was my first visit to Adyar, sent by our national board to attend the General Council meetings as well as the convention. Now was the occasion to see, to hear, and to talk with Brother Sri Ram in his own environment, to meet him in his office in the headquarters building, to have tea with him and his wife, Bhagirathi, who had already accompanied him on some of his tours to the United States. And again, that firm and competent handling of the society's business. At the same time, talks full of inspiration and practical theosophy, graciousness, gentleness, and always that clarity of vision that embraced the whole society, and a clarity of perception that made theosophy a living wisdom, a wisdom to be lived and a living wisdom. And that wonderful link for me with past leaders, particularly Annie Besant, with whom and for whom Sri Ram had worked in so many capacities, and who had been ever since I joined the society my own hero. Well, those trips to Adyar as head of the American section continued nearly every year after that, as we began to push, and I mean push with that American drive, I suppose, to have a World Congress in New York in 1975. We were very much involved in ongoing discussions concerning our literature, with theosophical titles to put into quest books, what we felt should not be continued in print, the actual quality of Adyar publications, which involved the equipment at the Vasanta Press. And as John Kern will remember, We had a grant from the Kern Foundation to provide Vasanta Press with some new equipment, a Heidelberg press, if I remember correctly, and such other matters, all of which were to be discussed at length with the president, Brother Sri Ram. Helen Zahara accompanied me on many of these December-January trips to Adyar. Virginia Hansen accompanied me on one of them. And by that time, of course, the Council had accepted our proposal to hold a World Congress in 1975 in New York City to commemorate the Society's founding. My proposal for the theme, In the Footsteps of the Founders, with the program in New York to be followed by programs in London, Bombay, and culminating in Adyar, had also been approved. Well, little did I think then, from that first visit in 1967 to the last one at which I would see Brother Sri Ram, 1972-73, that by the time of the New York Centenary meetings, there would be a new president, John Coates, and I myself would soon be living at Adyar as his vice president. But that's another story. Brother Sri Ram's last visit to the American section was in 1968, again, a memorable year. First, of course, we had been anticipating this visit, as we always did the visits of the president, but even more eagerly, because he had not been a guest at convention or toured the section since 1964, and much had happened in the section during that four-year interval. My own assumption of the national presidency, the beginning of the Quest Book program, the initiation of plans for the building of the TPH building, the second major building on the headquarters estate. But the first interruption in our scheduled agenda for the year came when Mr. Sri Ram was forced, for reasons of health, to come directly to Olcott on his arrival in the States and then to enter hospital for major surgery. That was a shock to us. His son, his younger son, Vajra, was a doctor, a heart specialist, and was associated with one of the hospitals on the near north side of Chicago. And his son is here. Where is Jason? There is Jason. And I was teasing Jason that because Brother Sri Ram appeared on television, Jason was about 7, I think, at that time. And Jason turned to me and said, "Someday I will be president of the Theosophical Society." But it was a time of great concern. I remember that, of course, his projected tour of the section was immediately canceled. And there was the long period of recuperation, but I remember so clearly the telephone call from Vajra saying, "The situation with Father is very serious. I think you should come in and see him. The surgery will be early tomorrow morning." And Ann and I drove. It took us nearly an hour to the north side of Chicago, of course. And to see him, this frail little man, not little really, but frail, so frail, sitting with a hospital gown, sitting cross-legged, sitting upright in his hospital bed to receive us. And the feeling that, you know, what could we do? How could we help him? Well, there was a long period of recuperation resulting in his staying here at Olcott for 3 months. A period that included, of course, the convention and summer school, at which he did give a number of talks. But it was during this recuperative period that I came to know him in a different way, going to his room every morning to see how he was, taking his mail, often staying on at his request to talk about many things. And as he grew in strength, he would often say, "Could we go for a little drive?" And we would drive over to the Arboretum or somewhere around in the area, and sometimes in silence and sometimes he would talk or ask a question, and we would discuss it. Of course, his family, his son Vajra, and his family, his wife Doris, and the three children were almost daily visitors. Ananya, Jason, and Ronnie. Two events particularly mark that period, however, indelibly in my memory. First, it was during this time of his recuperation. In fact, on June 16th, that he received word via telephone from Adyar of the passing of his wife, Bhagirathi, Radha's mother. And I recall so vividly going to his room to ask if there were anything that we could do at such a time. He said, "Joy, come in." And he said, "Sit down." And he began to talk about their life together. And he said, 60 years together. "If I had known," he said, "that she would die, I would not have left Adyar at this time." It was a sadness that was not a sadness. I don't know how else to say it. It was a sadness that was not with grief, but a sadness that was a kind of contemplative sadness. Can I put it that way? A beautiful and to me almost a sacred time as I listened to his story. The second event of that final visit in 1968 was one that had plunged all of us in the American section into almost a frenzy of activity in trying to correct and deny stories that were being broadcast about HPB. And that event was the assassination of Robert Kennedy. The apprehension of his assassin, Sirhan Sirhan, and the strange request of Sirhan for a copy of the secret doctrine. First and most immediate after that event was a news broadcast by John Chancellor that included the fantastic statement that HPB had fostered revolution, and then remarks by Truman Capote in Time magazine that Blavatsky had once advanced a theory of political assassination. Well, members were busy writing letters. You can imagine what I was trying to do. Letters to editors, many of us, including Boris de Zirkov in Los Angeles, called for interviews on radio and television. And in the midst of it all, we were receiving tremendous number of orders for the secret doctrine. Until we were almost out of stock. And then a call from Time magazine that a reporter would be visiting Olcott to interview us. And since the president was here, the reporter wanted to interview the president. And I cautiously said to Sri Ram, "This is really too much for you. You're recuperating from serious surgery." "No, I will meet him." Unfortunately, resulting article in the July 19th issue of Time magazine was so distorted and biased, but it did result in further calls for information about Theosophy and the Society. And one very positive result, just to complete the story of that episode, was that we then were able to extract a copy of a letter from the secretary of the Society for Psychical Research, saying that the statements about Madame Blavatsky, whatever they might have been and so on, it was not the Society for Psychical Research that was responsible, but the individual investigator. So it was not, at least there was the beginning of the clearing, and the reference, therefore, to the Hodson, the infamous Hodson report, was at least somewhat ameliorated. So it was a tremendous opportunity, 1968. So during that 20-year period, 1948 to 1968, There was a very close link between Sri Ram and the American section. And for me personally, it was a wonderful time that I shall never forget in many, so many different ways. He met one time with the staff, and we asked him to talk about his life. And this was during the early 60s. You may remember the hippie period. And I always remember Sri Ram saying, because we had some of the young people on our staff, of course, here, with long hair and, you know, the hippie appearance. And Sri Ram said, you know, when I was a young man, I rebelled against my parents, and I let my hair grow long. And the young people looked absolutely starved. Well, let me just close with reading just a few comments that I wrote then following his passing. And I called mine The Strength of Gentle Wisdom. You have in your folder the wonderful article by Sigvaldi Halmarsson, who was, of course, the General Secretary of the Icelandic section. And I always remember Sigvaldi at the World Congress as Sri Ram called on representative after representative of the sections, always, of course, beginning with the American section to give greetings. And so my first time, you know, standing up at an international gathering. And Sigvaldi, when he stood up, "Greetings from the land of ice and fire." That right, Ron? It was wonderful. That was Sigvaldi. So every time I see Sigvaldi's name, But Sri Ram cast a long shadow, a shadow that really in many ways was a shadow of light, not of darkness. An era came to an end with his passing. True, Mr. Sri Ram's theosophical career spanned the years from the presidency of the society's co-founder, Colonel Henry Steele Alcott, to his own administration. But in the direction he gave to the society's work, the unique vision he brought to bear on every problem, and he was a singularly modern man, aware of contemporary events, the repeated emphasis he gave to the individual need to awaken the full potential of consciousness, Mr. Sri Ram, in his life and work, did not end an era. He inaugurated a new era in our work. His influence and the fragrance of his presence among us must surely continue through all the years ahead. And those of us whose lives he touched have been the better, I can tell you, for it. And whatever I have been able to contribute, I think I owe in large part to the influence that he brought to bear on my life. He would not have us walk in his footsteps, I am sure. He called us, as a true teacher always does, to find our own way of walking. So if it seemed, as I wrote then, that a shadow had fallen on the path before us, it is only that our own eyes have closed against the light, and the darkness within seems to be without. When a knower of the wisdom has moved among us, his going from us cannot cast a shadow. It can only reveal a greater light, the luminosity of that essential truth that there is neither coming nor going, but only a continuing to be. The Theosophical Society had then to turn another page in its history, for the pages indicted by its fifth president were filled. In due time, we knew who would succeed him. John Coates, for the briefest of periods. But we may be grateful, and profoundly so, that we have deserved the wise and gentle leadership of Brother Sri Ram. All of us who have had the privilege of knowing him or working with him in the official activities of the society loved him deeply. and humanly, we miss his counsel and advice. But the light has never gone out, nor even dimmed. The society, richer for his service to it, richer for the service of all those great ones who have gone before us, shines on, a beacon to all who search, a radiant center of light for all who would learn to see with the unclouded vision of true perception.